Hi, it's Dacker. If you're like me, you probably have a wide variety of interests when it comes to your podcast listening. A little psychology here, a little history there, which is why I want to recommend a show perfect for those with eclectic tastes. Freakonomics Radio has more than 10 years and 500 episodes worth of answers to your biggest questions. But don't be fooled, it's not just for economists and business experts. Every week, Stephen Dubner dives into the hidden side of everything. With the help of guests, including CEOs, artists, and Nobel laureates, he breaks down all sorts of things, like how we choose the people we marry and why using swear words might be more important than you think. So don't miss out. Follow Freakonomics Radio right now, wherever you get your podcasts. Support for The Science of Happiness comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/happiness. That's odoo.com/happiness. Odoo, modern management made simple. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Hi, I'm Dacher Keltner. One thing we love at The Science of Happiness is hearing from our listeners. So whether you're a longtime fan or listening for the first time, please share your feedback. You can use the hashtag HappinessPod on social or email us at greater@berkeley.edu.
You know, my first police stop, I think I was like 11 or younger than that, right? I fit the description. They cuffed me, sat me on the sidewalk for like 30 minutes. And then just let me go. And that was like my introduction to law enforcement. And then it just never stops. It just keeps getting worse and worse and happening more and more often as time goes on.
In 2014, Aaron Harvey was living in Las Vegas when U.S. Marshals came for him.
They were arrested on charges related to an unjust California gang conspiracy law, which cited their rap lyrics and social media postings.
So it was me and 32 other individuals, first time to ever use this law, Penal Code 182.5. And they said that they had me documented as a gang member because of multiple police stops in my community. And because I was documented, therefore I could be held liable for any crimes committed by that gang, whether I had knowledge of it or not. They charged us with conspiracy to commit some shootings. They weren't even trying to prove that I had anything to do with the shootings.
Detectives testified his social media account included pictures of him with other gang members.
You know, I spent 8 months in county jail, $1.1 million bail, looking at 56 years to life.
After he was released because of a lack of evidence, Aaron Harvey's first task was to help dismantle the law that put him there, and he did. Aaron's an activist and a student at UC Berkeley, where he mentors formerly incarcerated students through an initiative called Underground Scholars. He's also our guest today. Aaron, it's great to have you on our show.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So when we asked you to try a science-tested practice to bring more happiness into your life, you chose Random Acts of Kindness, where you perform 5 kind acts all in one day. Why'd you choose this practice?
I was like, oh, well, I just do this anyway. My father wasn't really the type to be explaining himself often. You know, like his word was law. So I rebelled a lot. One thing that I did latch on to, though, was, you know, his lessons on providing and taking care of others who may be less fortunate. You know, my father was always the type of individual that was like, it's not necessarily about what you're kind of doing for yourself, but why are you doing it? And you were put on this planet to be like a blessing to other people. And how are other people going to benefit from your sacrifice or from like your God-given abilities? I remember when I was incarcerated and I was about to sign a deal for 19 years. And I was telling them I was just tired. I'm tired of going back and forth to court. I'm tired of, you know, if I sign now for 19 years, I'll be out and 40 something years old, whatever. He said, I've always taught you to stand up for your rights. And he was like, you know, Malcolm and Martin and many others like stood up for their rights. And because of their sacrifices, and he was like, and they died because of it. But because of their sacrifices, like, look at how many people were able to benefit from their sacrifice, right? And I'm not by no means comparing myself to them or others, but it's the same mentality of you have to pick up that baton and you have to continue to just push the needle forward.
Wow. So for this random acts of kindness practice, you did 5 kind acts in one day and then wrote about it. How'd it go?
It definitely felt weird in the beginning. So, you know, it really just started off just like calling my mom saying, hey, do you want some breakfast? Right? And I was like, this is stupid, right? Like, what am I doing? And I never made it to my mom to get her breakfast because I went to Starbucks and it was like this guy hanging outside of Starbucks. And I was like, oh, that's one, right? And I was like, hey, brother, you want something from Starbucks? And he was like, actually, I do. I'm like, all right, there you go. So I ended up buying him the Starbucks. And as I was handing him, he got like a meal or whatnot and a coffee. I was walking away and then something dawned on me. Like, no, we're not doing it this way. Like, you're not going to do it this way. So I went back to the guy, right? And I was like, hey, my name is Aaron. I'm sorry. Like, you know, you're not just some charity case, you know, of me just seeing you in need, me just giving you things and walking off. Like, you know, what's your name? He told me his name was Ronald. I'm like, all right, brother. You know what I mean? Where you live around here, yada, yada, yada. He's like, actually, I'm trying to move into my apartment today. And I was like, oh, for sure. I'll help you. Right.
What about your mom?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I never made it to my mom. Right. So I ended up helping this guy move into his apartment in his truck. So we're talking and talking and talking. And from leaving from him, I get a phone call from one of my good friends. And now he's on the freeway, tire busted. And I'm like, bro, come on, man. Like, call AAA. I'm tired. I just moved this dude's whole house. Like, but then again, I'm like, oh, this is like 3. It's got to be like 3 or 4.
Definitely.
Or something like that.
You're in bonus points right now. So.
Yeah. I go out to the freeway, you know, help him change his tire, whatever the case may be. And then I was like, hey, let me fill up your gas tank.
Oh, man.
We filled up his gas tank. And then me and him were actually talking about the 5 acts of kindness. And one thing we were like kind of sharing with each other was, you know, it's cool that you're kind of doing this or whatnot, but he was like, man, to be honest with you, as long as I've known you, like, you go through things, but you always seem to come out of things, and I believe it's because you're always doing for people, right? Yeah. Like, you're always taken care of because you're always taking care of people. And then that right there kind of like, I've kind of almost had those thoughts, but I've never really sat with that thought, right?
Yeah.
Because I've never even looked at it that way. Like, it does, like, I'm not doing this so I can be this, right? I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do. But we kind of sat and we talked with that. And that kind of like, that made me kind of look at my life more of a glass half full and not like all these things are just constantly happening to me. And like, why am I constantly going through, you know, struggles and things like that? But it's like, well, you always are coming out of them. There's not a lot of people who come out of certain things, right?
Did you do that part of the exercise where you write about what it was like and how you reflected on it?
So my reflections came at the end of the day when I was sitting talking with my friend.
And what ran through your mind?
When I bought him the Starbucks, of like, I can't go into a grocery store, a food place, and if there's somebody outside that's hungry, like, I can't just walk in, you know. I have to buy a meal. But I never take the time to actually get to know that person or to like talk to them. Or, you know, I'm just more like kind of like, hey, brother, you need something? And if they say no, I'm like, you sure? No, okay. And then I'm gone, right? Or if they do want something, I'm like, all right, go in, order whatever you want, I got you. But I never take the time to actually get to know. Like, that is a whole person. That's not just some like charity case, right? And by getting to know a person, even if it's just for like 2 minutes, right, there's a lot much more of an impact that you could have on their life, to where you might be able to put them in a position to where they don't have to stand outside that store and ask for money or food anymore.
Yeah.
So I was almost, again, even though I was like almost doing like good, quote unquote, I also felt like I was still doing people a disservice by not getting to know their names, getting to hear their stories and things like that. And I understand that not every time I'll even have time to do that. But if you have the time, I think you should take the time to do that. And like now I got his number. You know, he lives around the corner from my mom. I've already connected him with the organization that I'm a part of. You know, cool. So now, like, now he's even connected to a larger community. And I feel like that was the act of kindness, not the actual buying of the Starbucks.
You know, the studies on this, Sonia Lubomirsky's done work, and that's why we have this practice, is if you can do five of these things in one day, you do feel happier, less depressed, you function better at work. There's a lot of other work on just, you know, when you practice kindness, it's good for your body, you feel stronger. What did you notice in your own experience?
I think I just kind of might define happiness a little different.
Yeah.
Than just the general kind of understanding of happiness.
How do you define it?
Doing these things almost kind of pains me. And I think that's probably why I never really got to know people, right, that I would be doing things for, because to see people in need, to see people hurting, actually kind of hurts me. The fact that people are even having to ask for basic, what I feel like are like human like rights, necessities, food, water, housing, it just shows that we're like in a failed state. That doesn't bring me happiness, right? Yeah. But what does bring me happiness was the fact of, like, I helped him move into his apartment. Like, he just moved into this apartment. And the look on his face and how excited he was about this apartment let me know, or I'm just assuming that this was the first time he had something of his own, right? Or just like a bed of his own. That made me happy because that brought him some type of peace. That brought him some type of joy, of accomplishment, of that he was kind of like moving up in the ladder of life, right? Those are the type of things that bring me happiness.
You know, one of the things Aaron, this conversation brings into focus is it's kind of a definitional problem that the science of happiness is grappling with, which is one way to think about happiness is, oh, I feel good about my life, right? And but there's something else that I think you're talking about getting to know somebody or giving resources to the unhoused or going into a store and buying something for somebody. Psychologists have started to call it meaning or purpose. How would you describe what you felt and what you feel when you're dealing with injustice or people who are really suffering and trying to make their lives better? What would you call that?
Yeah, so I think the conflict is, you know, giving a person a meal doesn't make me happy because they're going to need a meal tomorrow. Putting a person in a position to where they can go get their own meals, that's what makes me happy. Because now an individual has become self-sufficient. Now they could be an example, you know, to their families and to people around them, right? Now they can also be a giver and not just a receiver. So it's almost kind of like give a man a fish or teach a man how to fish kind of thing.
Yeah.
So when I'm giving people fishes, that kind of like hurts me. It's necessary and you should do it. But if you also have the ability to teach a person how to fish or put them in a position to learn how to fish, that brings me happiness because that's something that will continue on.
I have to ask you, Aaron, you know, you are cuffed at 11, 15 years later, you're wrongfully convicted and you spend 8 months in jail. And you grew up in a culture of a certain kind of kindness. You want to pursue kindness. How does this experience with so much brutality and lack of kindness frame how you think about practicing kindness?
I feel like I have every right to like hate people or even hate white people. But I would have these conversations with my dad of like, you know, I hate them or I hate, you know what I mean? And he'd be like, yeah, okay, all right, I understand that. But what you don't understand, or even what they don't understand, is a system that is being perpetuated. The individual might be good in nature, but let's just say their job may require them to do things that are immoral. So is it that person or is it that system that we need to focus on? Because you could easily change that person, but that system is still there. So what do you hate more, or who should you hate, right? And I don't think you should hate people. I don't think you have to like them. But I don't think you should hate anybody. What you should hate is systems that continue to exploit and kill off people. So that was like a restructuring of how I was viewing the world. So it's easy to hate a person and then, okay, yeah. Alrighty. Okay, you hate a person because they're doing something. Okay, so you, all right, now that person is taken out of the picture, however, but these things are still occurring. So what did you solve? And now, so like I'm thinking of the broader spectrum of if you really are tired of these things, then you should be focusing on the things that are allowing it to continue and try to dismantle those and not people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. There's old social psychology research showing that, you know, Western Europeans don't think in terms of systems, you know, especially in the United States, they think in terms of individuals, and that misleads us. So really insightful. What sort of wisdom would you give to us to be thinking about how to cultivate kindness?
You got to really be intentional about stepping out of yourself for a second. You spoke on it about, you know, Western Europeans and just like really America, right? Or the United States of America, shall I say. It just has this real individualistic kind of like culture and mindset. As long as I'm doing okay, then everything's okay. I always challenge my friends or when I'm speaking to people, you should never go 24 hours without doing something for someone who can't repay you. We walk by things every day. Like we step over unhoused people every day, right? And it's kind of just become normalized and you should never go a day. There's going to be something that's going to come across you every day, if not multiple things that are going to come across you every day. And you should lend a hand. And if you're not, you're kind of like not just doing that individual a disservice, but you're ultimately doing yourself a disservice as well.
Well, I am really grateful for your time, Aaron. So thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
What compels us to be kind?
It's relatively straightforward to explain why people are kind to their family members and why they're kind to their friends. It's a bit more puzzling to explain why they're kind to strangers, but we have some explanations for that too.
More on the science up next.
Once upon a time, it was difficult for evolution to explain why people were kind. Now, the opposite is the case. We have a whole range of theories that explain why people are kind in different ways to different people.
Oliver Scott Curry is the research director at kindness.org, a group that uses scientific studies to inspire kindness.
We'd found a couple of dozen experiments where people have been either assigned to a help yourself condition or a help other people condition. We found, sure enough, that helping did indeed make you happy. People in the helping other conditions reported having greater life satisfaction and positive emotions than people in the help yourself condition.
Oliver's team noted that none of these studies specified the recipient of these acts.
So we wanted to see if people were happier to help some types of other people than others. So we had a study where we had people either help someone close to them, like a family member or a friend, or someone distant, like a stranger.
They also had a group do kind acts for themselves and a last just observe kindness in others.
And what we found, somewhat to our surprise, was although helping in general made people happier than not helping, it didn't seem to make a difference who it was that you helped.
Oliver believes there's an evolutionary reason for that.
Humans are a social species. We've lived together in social groups for 50 million years. And during that time, we've relied on one another to survive and thrive. And cooperative behavior has really been one of the humans' distinguishing features and has been responsible for our remarkable success. Helping a stranger might be a way of making a new friend, for example, kickstarting a new social relationship. Helping strangers can also raise your profile, can raise your status, can earn you the respect and admiration of your peers and lead them to choose you in future.
Other people are our life support systems. We're generally happy when we're plugged into that system and generally unhappy when not. Kindness helps strengthen our connection to others. It's also associated with all kinds of benefits: less stress, less anxiety, better cardiovascular health, even a longer life expectancy.
I think overall people underestimate the benefits of kindness for themselves and for others, and that they should give it a whirl because they will probably like it. And that doesn't mean that they have to jump straight in and, you know, donate a kidney or sell all their worldly possessions. They can start small by saying hello to people on their commute or holding doors open. They don't have to jump from 0 to 100 immediately. They're probably already at 50%. So just try out 51%. And if you like that, try out 52% and then keep going till you find your equilibrium.
I'm Dacher Keltner. Thanks for joining me on The Science of Happiness. Check out the Random Acts of Kindness practice by visiting greatergood.berkeley.edu/podcasts and clicking on this episode. We've got a new book out on the science of gratitude featuring many of our past guests like comedian W. Kamau Bell and the psychologist Sarah Aljo. Learn more at greatergood.berkeley.edu/gratitudeproject. Our podcast is a co-production of UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center and PRX. Our senior producer is Shuka Kalantari. Production assistance is from Jenny Cataldo and Ben Manila of BMP Audio. Our associate producers are Nina Sparling and Haley Gray. Our executive producer is Jane Park. Our editor-in-chief is Jason Marsh. Our science director is Emiliana Simon-Thomas.